What we're going to do is we're going to read Nehemiah 4. Now, let me give you some context. First of all, we are working through the book of Nehemiah. But we're doing it in terms of chunks, themes. It's quite a difficult book to read through. There's lots of lists. It's a bit all over, you know, sort of all over the place. It's a collection of journals and letters and stuff. It's quite an unusual book. So we're doing it in themes. And we really feel that this is a book for Woody now. And I have been amazed at the connections. Excuse me. As I've studied this, and as the other guys have studied this, doing this as a team of elders, as we've looked into what was happening in the life of Israel. Sorry, Kathy Oslood. As we've looked into that, the connections that are relevant for us are absolutely amazing. This book, I won't ask for hands up, but I would encourage you to read it. It's quite short. It's about, 12 chapters or something. Please read the book. Read the book. There's not a film yet. I don't know why they've never made a film of it. It's amazing. Anyway, read the book. Any filmmakers here? There you go. Please read the book. Get an idea. See what God says to you out of it. Because we really believe that God, we planned this a while ago, and it's just lining up with where we are. So before we read Nehemiah 4, which will be on the screen, and you've got Bibles, I just want to put some context. So by the time we get to Nehemiah 4, they're actually doing building. So what's happened before this? Right. Well, way before, I don't know, what, 300 or 400 years before, the northern kingdom got destroyed. So basically, Israel was there. We've done this introduction a number of times, but one of the things with Woody is you can get different, the same church with different sort of groups of people. It's a bit of a challenge to, have you heard this bit? No. You were doing Mark when I was here before. So I just want to give the sort of bigger picture, okay? So God has judged his people because of their rebellion and their idolatry, because they were not putting Yahweh, the holy God, at the center. So eventually, after loads and loads of warnings, he said, I'll send people and they'll sort you out. The people came and they sort them out. So they took the northern kingdom away. And then about 150-something years later, they came and they destroyed Jerusalem. The Babylonians came and destroyed Jerusalem. And the Babylonians were very clever. They didn't take everybody away. They didn't kill everybody and really destroy everything like the Assyrians do. I actually have left my phone on, so I hope the same doesn't happen to me. Thank you, John. Right, the Babylonians were very clever. What the Babylonians did, they took the smart people. They took the lawyers, the leaders, the royals. They took the cream. They did this all over. And they collected these huge the groups of learning and everything, where they took all the people from different places. It was incredible. Incredible culture. The Babylonians and the Persians did it even more, which is when they had such a huge empire and they could run it. It's mind-blowing. Fascinating. Anyway, so what you've got is so Jerusalem has been smashed, walls knocked down, the temple destroyed, and everything. And then a few years later, God said there'd be a generation out. You're going to lose a generation. You'd be away for about 70 years. And people then start returning. So first of all, a group go back under a guy called Zerubbabel. And then Ezra, 150 years later, about 130 years, he takes a group back. And they rebuild the temple. And they start to, Ezra particularly, tries to start to bringing the idea of God's laws. So they still don't understand the laws of God, but they, Ezra's trying to get them to live in these ways by getting the temple going again and talking about holy living. And then Nehemiah gets the call. We'll do this in a bit of detail. He goes back, and his thing is to build the walls. So he starts, he gets the people to start building the walls. And that's where we're at now. Okay, so this is all wall building. Ooh, right. Is it possible to get it bigger than that? If without too much messing about, don't worry if it's not. No? Okay. Oh, there we go. Right. No, because it's a slightly different version. I get confused. Here we go. Okay. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews. And in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish it in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burnt as they are?" And Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What they are building, if even a fox climbed up on it, he would break down their wall of stones." Nehemiah says, "Hear us, O God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. Also, our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we'll be right in there among them, and we'll kill them, and we'll put an end to the work." Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your homes." When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. And each of the builders wore his sword at his side as he worked, but the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "The work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us." So we continued the work with half the men holding spears, from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. At that time I also said to the people, "Have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night, so they can serve us as guards by night and work on by day. Neither I nor my brothers, nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water." Amen. Okay. There's a verse. So we're going to switch over now to the PowerPoint, and we'll work our way through that. So, This is today's talk. Each of these is, like last week was Stu saying, prayer in a time of rebuilding. For what do we believe? This is the time of rebuilding. So today is challenge, facing challenge in a time of rebuilding. Okay, so the text is 4:10. "Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." Really interesting, isn't it? It was at this point, it was after the rebuilding started, that the people thought, "We can't do it." It was when they'd actually started, they'd actually got organized. The previous chapters in Nehemiah are all about getting organized in different families and stuff. It was after the work starts and then actually getting on with it. And they think, "We can't do this. We're not strong enough. And look how much trouble." I didn't know there was this much trouble. I didn't know there was this much work to do. And that phase has to be worked through. That phase, that negative phase, has to be worked through. You don't know what that's going to be until you start. It's always the same. You start a job. You ever thought what a great idea to be to paint a big wall? Normally about a meter in. Jan's thinking, you've never painted a wall in your life. I've done some prep for Jan to paint walls. But you're thinking, oh, really? Have I bitten off more than I can chew? It's funny how enthusiasm can just dry up. Once you look at something and realizing nothing's changing here, I'm not actually getting anywhere. Which is why enthusiasm is a good catalyst, maybe, but it's hard to sustain with that. Right, I need some people to pray for me just while I'm doing this, because I think all that reading, I don't think it was a good idea for me to do all that reading, actually. Because I've just gone a little bit. So, challenges facing Nehemiah. These are all going to come together in a year. I didn't do the points thing. So you got it all up there together. So look at the whole lot, and then I'll go through it point by point. A reluctant king. By this, the king, Artaxerxes, was the guy that Nehemiah had to go to ask. As Stu pointed out last week, after Nehemiah got the heart call, the Holy Spirit breaking his heart for what Jerusalem was like, he spent twice as long praying as they did building the thing. He spent a long time praying and fasting, and eventually came to the king and he asked him. But I say reluctant king because this king was the same king that issued an order saying that the walls should not be built. When Ezra went and they started to do the temple and all the rest of it, they were fine with them building the temple. I said in the introduction a few weeks ago, the Persians were very big on having other gods looked after, just in case they were the most important god. So wherever they took over societies and stuff, they would ensure the priests and the temples carried on, because they wanted to cover all their bases. They were polytheists, and they wanted to cover all the bases. So they said, yeah, this Yahweh, send his priest. But they said, you will not build the walls. And in fact, when they started to build the walls, they sent down, and Artaxerxes sent a letter back saying, you will not rebuild the walls, because he didn't want a city, a potential place of rebellion. He just wanted a temple. So he had already said, this is not going to happen. That's probably why, one of the reasons why Nehemiah was praying a long time, and one of the reasons why it was very courageous to go to this king. It was very courageous to ask a king in this time for anything. You looked at them wrong and you were dead, you know. But he had a reluctant king. I also wonder, you see, Nehemiah was born and raised in Persia. He lived a good life. He was a very rich man. It was a very powerful position. This was a lot to give up, to go back and do this difficult job that nobody had managed to do in about 150 years. This was really difficult. I wonder if you have people around him going, do you know what? Someone will do it. Just look at the gig you got. You can keep talking to the king. You've got a lot more power where you are. Just use your influence. Take it easy. Someone else will do it. I love that about Nehemiah. He said, nah, I got it. I'm going to do it. It was a vulnerable city. It was ludicrous to have a city with no walls. A city with no walls, the technical term is a pile of rubble. It was only a city in history and in potential. It was not a city. You cannot defend a pile of rubble. It was open to everything. And of course, since the Assyrians had been, they had brought all these other peoples in. Because that's the way the Assyrians worked. They took everyone out. They killed most of them. They took the rest and they put other people in. They totally destroyed the culture. So the people in Samaria didn't want another power base there. It was a vulnerable thing. So there's another challenge. It started from a demotivated people. This was a people who'd been sitting in this rubble for all this time. Two of them had gone back full of enthusiasm. Two different groups had gone back full of enthusiasm, built the temple. We're on our way. Here we go. No more. And in fact, when they did try to build a bit more, they built some walls and they built a few gates. And some raiders went in and they burnt it all again. I'm not sure whether that was Persian. But basically, the little bit they did start, You know, that's like I'll go back to repainting a wall, I know. You go back to repainting a wall and you're doing really well, and then you find you got damp, and so you've got to dig it all out. And you think, oh, I'm not going to bother, you know. Just dig wood chipper. So, not recommended. This was a very demotivated people. Very demotivated people. That was a bigger challenge, I think, building the walls. It was a divided community. Remember, most of the people had been, transplanted. Groups of people went back. I mean, quite serious numbers, but they also went all around the outside. And not all of them responded to the call, so they were not all interested in Jerusalem being rebuilt. And in fact, it says one town, Tekoa, the nobles said, we're good. Some people went and helped them, but so the people were divided. There was also some issues going on, we'll find out later, among the nobles and the people. The nobles having the money, they were, when people were getting into debt, they were charging the people interest. They said, yeah, I'll lend you some money, be interested. And they said, I can't pay you interest. They say, I'll take your son or daughter. Can you imagine what that does in a culture, in a group of people, where the nobles are taking, any young people in here, where they're taking the sons and daughters. And when they talk about the daughters, there's a Hebrew word that's got the intonation of abuse. So you know what we're talking about here. They're taking female slaves. Now that, and this is, Nehemiah has to deal with all this, and this is coming. So, you know, not today, just to keep you, you know, like happening in the future series. But this is the amazing thing he had to deal with. They weren't united. They weren't a united people. They had a lack of knowledge of the Torah, the word, the very thing that God said, what you've got to do is keep this. They didn't know it. Later on, they have to deal with that. And what we're going to find out and what we've been seeing about today is it was a raft of opposition. The opposition was a mixture of the governor of Samaria and his army, as we saw. There were Arabs, there were Ammonites, there were all the peoples, sort of further away, the peoples that had come back. It was a whole, I think it's probably one of those situations where he says, I don't get on with you, but if that's your enemy, we can get on. You know, so you make alliances. You make alliances with people. Because none of them wanted the Jews to succeed. Okay. Right. And in terms of opposition, behind all this, I believe, I'm going to say it, was satanic opposition. Satan knows the scriptures. Satan knows the place of Jerusalem and the promises of God. Satan knows God said there will always be, I will always have a king on the throne of David. All of the prophecies talk about the Messiah coming, to Jerusalem. I just see the hand of Satan, especially in the lies. There's so many lies going on in this where they were trying to stop them from rebuilding. The enemy did not want Jerusalem rebuilt. This isn't just happening on a human level. There's a lot of things. Okay, so there's his challenges. Let's just look at his opposition, because this is a main part of his challenge. So the people are sort of doing his editing on various fronts. So there's three, this is in three parts. It's before, during, and after. Before, there was mockery. They started off with very mild mockery. They're not going to do that, look at this, it's not going to work, is it? And then there was ridicule. Now, this is almost like psychological warfare, because what they're doing this, he's doing them as they're building it. He's saying this as they're building to a large group. He's got his army behind him. Sanballat is saying, that's not going to work. The bricks are burned. And the other guy says, yeah, if even a fox went up, it'd all fall down. So they're undermining. These people are struggling anyway. You know, these are ordinary families trying to work out how to put bricks together. They're undermining. There's almost like, I'm sure this is only the highlights. This barrage of criticism. This barrage of criticism coming in. Undermining. You really going to do that? Takes you back to the beginning, doesn't it? Did God really say that? You won't die. Those, the sort of innuendo, that's just getting under, just taking the heart of the vision away. So there was ridicule in that. When they were actually building, then it got more serious. They said, right, we're going to get an alliance, and we're going to go in and we're going to kill them. So these guys now had to go into a new area of courage, of fear, dealing with fear. when you're building and you're trying to fill this hole up, and any minute you know there's some Samaritan army can come in there and you're toast. That is ridicule at another level. But what I find fascinating is that after the wall was built, when you read the book, you'll see this, the opposition intensified. When something was actually being done, when something was raised from the rubble, when something was actually going on, when the people could be encouraged, the enemy went bonkers. They tried to destroy. Most of this was centered on Nehemiah. Here's a check, guys. Leadership is a difficult call. It's a godly call, but I'd encourage you to make sure the Lord is calling you, because Nehemiah is one of the best books on leadership ever written. In any culture, anything at all. It's an incredible book on leadership. And this is what he has to deal with. This is like a masterclass in dealing with stuff. So first of all, it's distraction and plots to harm. Come and meet us. You'll be fine. He said, I'm not coming. I haven't got time. I'm not leaving the building. He knew that if he went there, vulnerable, even with a few guards, he was going to get done in. Then they were very devious. They libeled. They sent him a letter which said, Sanballat said, I understand you're intending to make yourself king. And it was an open letter. Now what that means is it went through all the messengers. As an open letter, it could be read by everyone. It was like fake news 2,400 years ago. He deliberately did. This is misinformation. And again, Nehemiah says, this is in your own head. You're making it up. He doesn't go out. He doesn't defend himself. Leaders, he doesn't defend himself. He doesn't waste time on that. He stays on the main thing, which is what he's been called to do. He doesn't go and meet with all the people who might have had the letter. He just says, I'm going to do what God has called me to do. And he's trusting God to sort that lot out. Then there was treachery from within his own people. One of his own people said to him, he went to see this guy, and this guy said, let's go and, you're in danger here. Let's go and meet in the temple. Let's go meet in the holy place of God. And he knew that would be a sin. He wasn't a priest. He was being tricked. He was being drawn in. He said, you're not for my best. This was a guy within the city who was in alliance. But he kept focused. And then there were false prophets. There were a number of people within the community who said, we're prophesying for God, and they were prophesying against him. So he had a bag of stuff to deal with. So what were the keys to his success? Now, there's a lot here, and in fact, I'm leaving quite a few things for Marv to pick up next week, because there's another three or four things. I'm trying to focus on the things the deal with challenge. And here are the four things in this sense for this week. Prayer, trusting God and what God has said, focus and effort. As Stu pointed out, Nehemiah prayed, I think he prayed 9 times during the whole of this book. And we've seen it today. There are situations arising, he prays. After an initial time of serious prayer for months and months and fasting and stuff, he prays. Because he's got the word from God, so he's just got to go with it now. But he keeps praying. He keeps in touch with God. This really, really blessed me in terms of his prayer and his boldness. I read a comment the other day that he probably learned to pray from the Psalms. That just blows my mind, because I'm all about the Psalms at the moment. And I think that the Lord is saying, look, I got this book for you guys. Just never come out of it. It's awesome. But this is what they were doing, you see. In exile, the priests and that had gone into exile and stuff. They were starting to get the scriptures together. That's why he knew the Torah, the five books, because the priests were being in captive and they were doing this stuff. It was a center of learning. God is amazing. So they were putting the Psalms together. So there's a good chance, as a rich, educated guy, he knew that. Anyway, he also knew the Torah, so he knew the promises of God. Here's the focus. He knew God's word. That's why he could say to him, Lord, you said that if your people repented, you would restore us. I'm calling out that promise now, Lord. Oh, guys, you need to know what you're going to God with. You're going to God as his children. You're going to God in his grace and his kindness. In Thessalonians, it says someone was laid aside sick, but God was kind and he healed him. You've got a kind and gracious God. But when you go with the word, you are going from a place of authority, a place of power. Hear that right. This is not abusive power, because God has entrusted you with that. Please get that word. Go to God for a word. We're going to come back to this. This is so important, to have a word from God. You need to stand on a word from God. Once he had that promise of God, once he knew after that prayer, this is what God wants me to do, nothing could stop him. None of those challenges, none of those things, nothing. You need to find it. You need to search. You need to wrestle. He had focus. Every time something happened, he said, I haven't got time for that. I'm building. I can't go there. I'm building. They're going to attack. Carry on building. Pick up a sword. At that point, he had a couple of options. He could have got them all together and gone out on a big fight. He could have said, I'm going to send to my king for some more guys. He could have done a lot of things, but they would have all distracted from the main thing being the main thing. And the main thing was to build the wall. And he never lost focus on building the wall. No matter what happened, they kept the same clothes on. They never changed out of their clothes because they thought, we don't lose any time. If we go and change and they attack, we've got to keep building and building and building while there's light. Said, you know, even when they went to get water, even when they went to wash, there's actually, sorry, Kathy, I'm going to Bill Johnson mode, slow down. There's actually one translation that says they only took their clothes off when they washed. That's not in the scriptures. It's just they couldn't handle the idea of these guys being so minging. But they would have been all brought together, you know, one big smell. So they're building, but do you see what I'm saying here? Focus. Don't worry about washing. Don't worry about what people think of your smell. Don't worry about attacks. Don't worry about mockery. Don't worry about libel. Don't worry about ridicule. Don't worry about division. Don't worry about people not taking part. Don't worry about the people that haven't come. Focus. Focus. What has God said? That's what we're going for. Okay. Effort. Nehemiah had people with him. He had brothers with him. He had men. He had his own militia because he was a governor. He could have said, I'm just going to organize things. I'm going to go pray. I'm going to do stuff. He never took an easy way out. He was there building. He was there with a sword. It took a lot of effort to do this. Now, here's the thing. They managed to do in about 56 days what they couldn't do in 150 years because God's grace was on it. But they worked hard. These things all have to go together. Nothing is done without effort. You read the story of some of the saints. You just look at what Paul went through. There's a balance. Striving, resting in God, working. It's all a balance. You only get to walk in balance by walking, don't you? And you only get to understand it by doing it. But he put in great effort. He led by example. Right, so now I've really enjoyed Nehemiah. It's the most amazing book ever. And I have really struggled with Aya. I've got so many nervous tics. It's a wonder I can walk. I really struggled with this, guys. Because a few weeks ago, it opened my heart, and I found it hard. But we need to move on, but we need to know why we're moving on and what we're moving on into. I know people are starting to think, are we still going on about, you know, people leaving and stuff like that? And I want to move on. I want to move on. I was so encouraged by you all here today, by the worship, the teams. There's so much to be thankful for what God is doing among us. But I want to address this because I see parallels. And these are the parallels I see. Woody, we had a previous period of growth. We had a time, So we've been here for 140 years, you know. Well, I haven't. But Woody Bapp has been here for, you know, 140 years. And, you know, sort of for the, going back about 5 years, 20 years before that, we had terrific growth, you know, particularly among students. And many students came. There weren't many student churches. We had, first of all, part-time workers, and we had student team. So we felt it was a call. I remember the church meeting where we felt God was calling us, go serious on students. And we did. Over the years, we had thousands. And, you know, many of you here came as students and have stayed. And that's been the way that we grew and the way that we could send people on. And we got used to the idea of sending people on. And then a few years ago, I have to say, in line with a new pastorate, which is a challenging thought, people starting to get, people who'd been here for quite a while and were pillars in this community were starting to get called out. And when, you know, we're not there yet. And, you know, really amazing people have gone into their destiny. Stuff that I could see in their lives for years, but they've gone into their destiny. They've gone to be called somewhere else. They've moved for family reasons. They've moved for really, really good reasons. Mostly. One or two people, to be totally honest, I think maybe should have stayed, worked something out, and then gone. I've got to be totally honest in that, because otherwise I'm putting too much of a gloss on this, and I do not want to do that. So I will say most people have left to go on in what God has got for them. And that's why I go back to the idea of getting a word. Please follow the word, follow the Lord. Come back to that. So we've had this, after this terrific time of growth, and that's been a lot of adjustment, and it's still happening. And because of that pruning, as we call it, with the Lord removing people, because a lot of it has been totally that, the Lord pruning us back. People have gone. Obviously, we've lost resources in terms of the financial base. And it's had an impact on the vision. You know, when I came, I had this vision to really be transforming the community. We had really radical ideas and all sorts of stuff. But we've not been able to pursue a lot of that because the base has drawn in. But I still believe the Lord is in this, and the Lord is doing this, and the Lord has got a slightly different thing in mind for us. Another challenge is that we have a very diverse local community around us. We've got the local school up there, St. Monica's. We've got some contacts too. They've got about 25 languages. So this is, don't you think this is students? We've got about 500 families in the area. We've got a lot of Muslim families, got a lot of Czech families. We've now gotten an influx of Chinese students because of the, particularly because of these two new student towers, as you might want to call them. So there's real challenges in how we engage with this community. So, next slide. I'm taking the four things. Now, some of you are going to say success. I know there's a saying, we're not called to be successful, we're called to be faithful. Now, I buy into that. But I want to see the faithfulness produce something. You know, when you read Acts and they're being faithful and 3,000 people come to faith, do you see what I'm saying? So I've kept success because I want to see us be used by God in transforming this community, to be faithful, but not to rest in that. It's a real balance. I know it's a real balance. We've got to be faithful. We've got to rest in what God has done, but we've got to work, and we've got to go through challenges, and we've got to struggle. And we've got to try and get on doing it. There's a lot involved in this. But success, to me, says our first call is to be faithful to God, but as we do his work, to see people added to the kingdom. Do you know what? In Acts, they started off with addition, and then they went into multiplication. Now, we're not even in addition yet, but I believe that is kingdom. Because you see all over the world, the kingdom's breaking out, and people are coming to Christ. And in your quiet moments, just go before God and say, God, why not here, Lord? Why not here? Why not now? Why not here? Why not now? Because I believe the Lord is looking for those hearts. I don't believe the Lord is going to come along and have to smash people who say, oh, we're not really interested. I think he's looking for hearts that are saying, do you know what? Whatever it takes, Lord, we want to see people coming to meet Jesus. Okay. So, trusting God in his word. So, sorry, a little success. Prayer. Right, prayer. Recently, this has really been opened up for us. Looking at Psalms and times of prayer. There are opportunities for prayer. There's Into the Deep. Leaders, I'd encourage you to get to leaders' prayer. We need to be praying. If we don't get anything else from Nehemiah, we know that we need to do a lot of praying to see stuff moving. We need to trust in God and his word. God has called us here. We need to focus on the task. We need to be focused on him, but his vision for us. Remember that word we had a few weeks ago, we are light to Cates. We need to be positive about that. We need to be intentional about that. And it will take effort. It takes effort to pray. It takes effort to fast and pray. It takes effort to get on. It takes effort. The other night we had a Disney party here. We had 90 kids in from the community. It was fantastic. It was hard work, but it was made a lot easier by the fact we had a team. A team worked together, and it was amazing. So it takes effort. Right. Just want to bring us back to this for the final one. Jesus. What a king. Artaxerxes changed his mind. Yeah, okay. Yeah, did a good thing. Jesus. Jesus is our king. Jesus is the king that sends us. Jesus is the king that equips us. Jesus is the king who said, it's my church. And the gates of hell will not prevail against it. It's my church. So we're working for Jesus. That's the context. It's Jesus' church. And he invites us, as Paul said, to be co-builders. How exciting is that? That Jesus Christ says, come with me and be co-builders in my church. Amazing. And then finally, when we looked the other day, we were saying, Lord, you're going to speak to us in prayer. I'd encourage you to have a look at what's on the walls up in the prayer room from 24 Prayer, because the way I see it anyway, the theme was very much about moving on. It was very much about God is here. It's sad when people leave. Bless them out. It's actually exciting because you see them going on into their destiny. And that is a privilege to be involved with. There's one up there that's just it's a brilliant drawing. I don't know who this is. A drawing of a hand like that with go. That's what it's about. Go. Make disciples. Preach the gospel. Heal the sick. Be a light to Cates. And this is my final point. What is he saying to you? What is he saying to you? This is where I get concerned. If people are going and it's not based on what God is doing and not based on a word. Let me just tell you where I'm at. I was called to Woody 30 years ago and God has never said go. I was called to be pastor and I didn't want it. I was called to be pastor. I cannot go anywhere. Even if you all leave and there's no money, I cannot leave. I will be pastor here without any money. Jan and I will be here. We'll be here because the Lord has said, go there and do that. Until the next order comes down the line, that's what you've got to do. Seek the Lord for the word for yourself, whether it's for here or whatever. But once you get that word, then you can rest on that. Once you get that word, that's your resting place because the Lord has said it. That's your standing place. You will need to defend it. The enemy will come and try and push you off. You say, oh, did the Lord really say that? But once you get that word, so my encouragement to you is seek the Lord, get the word, and then focus. Thank you.